Welcome to the Learning Forums podcast, sponsored by Distress and Crisis Ontario. Learning Forums offers programs specifically designed for DCO member organizations. This podcast is meant to inform, educate, and support your work. Enjoy the program, and we welcome your comments and feedback at learningforums.ca/contact with the subject podcast.
My name is Dana Lowry, and I work at the University of Western Ontario. I work at Research Western with grants, and I also participate actively within the autism community. I've been on council with Autism Ontario. I currently run a life skills program for young adults on the autism spectrum. I'm really excited to be here today to talk to you about something so near and dear to my heart. When I was first invited to come and talk about autism, I kind of wondered how I would be able to compress weeks of conference material into 25 minutes. I have decided to share a snapshot of what the life looks like. And when I was asked to discuss this, I thought, well, how would this suit the people answering the phones? And I thought, if I put myself in your shoes, what would I want to know? And four things came up. First off, I'd need to know about autism. Second thing, I would need to know what the experiences and the challenges are that these individuals face, whether it be the individual on the spectrum or the family member. Who I would be helping on the line, and lastly, how I could help them. So today's presentation is going to include the definition of ASD, or Autism Spectrum Disorder, the diagnosis or discovery of this disorder, some common myths and some complications, mental health, access to services, and how you can help an individual calling. So the definition of autism, or rather autism spectrum disorder, it's an umbrella of five different developmental disorders. It's a pervasive developmental disorder. It's neurological in its genesis, and it is lifelong. The behavior can run from severe to mild or high functioning. There are three behaviors that are consistent amongst the groups, and that is communication deficits, challenges in social, and also repetitive or ritualistic behaviors. So that could include stemming. Now, stemming is when an individual does something like clapping their arms like this, or clapping. It could be noise like clicking, whistling, and so on. So what is included on the spectrum? Well, there are five disorders, and one of them is childhood disintegrative disorder, CDD. It's incredibly rare. It's about 1.7 individuals out of 100,000. So I don't know how they came up with 1.7, but there you have it. What happens is that this individual, they develop in much the same way that a neurotypical individual would. And a neurotypical is a loving term of endearment that the community refers to an individual who is not on the spectrum, so a neurotypical. So an individual who has CDD is going to develop in much the same way that anyone else would. The problems come in later, about 3 years of age, when they start to regress. And in some instances, these individuals recognize that they are moving backwards. They're losing some of the skills that they once held. And that could be anything from being able to use the washroom. And they will ask about it, which as a parent, you would probably be a little heartbroken every time that happened. But anyway, that is one. The second one is Rett syndrome, which is a debatable point. My understanding is that it's not always agreed upon as to whether or not it is on the spectrum. It has some characteristics that make it autistic. So the individual, like somebody who has CDD, they will develop as normal. And then 6 months, between 6 and 18 months, they start to regress. It sounds like a very messy disorder, but it is considered to be on the spectrum. Autism is, of course, the classic disorder. Most of us recognize it. Now, the funny thing is that within autism itself, the disorder, it has a wide array. So we've got individuals who are severely autistic, who require assistance in doing things like using the washroom, getting out of bed, getting dressed, feeding themselves, all the way through to someone like Temple Grandin, who has a doctorate. And who is honestly the world's leading expert in autism and all things autism related. So that is autism. It's the classic disorder with all three of the characteristics that I had mentioned previously. Asperger's is a unique one out of the bunch because it lacks the cognitive delay and the language delay. The last one is the pervasive developmental disorder not otherwise specified. So this umbrella, this autism spectrum disorder, it's all about pervasive developmental disorders. PDD-NOS is what it's called. It's where people get put as far as a diagnosis is. That's where their diagnosis is. If there's something that's missing from the criteria that would make them either autistic or have Asperger's. These disorders are, of course, characterized by the three that I had mentioned before, so that's social skills, communication, repetitive behaviors or interests. An example would be there's a young man who has a fascination with medieval weaponry. He will tell you everything about medieval weaponry. You could be leaving the room and he will still be telling you about medieval weaponry, from how it's made, how it was used, what different ones there were. Brilliant individual, but very focused on medieval weaponry. So Asperger's does not have a cognitive delay, typically. So they are unique, and again, they are the individuals who don't fit into the cognitive delay. This population is typically overwhelmed by certain stimulation or certain external things, like the lighting in here would be, for the most part, too much for them. Noises are also an issue. Feel, smell are also an issue. As an example, I run a life skills program through Autism Ontario for high-functioning young adults on the autism spectrum. And last Wednesday, we were cooking in a church. And one of the rules is you turn on the overhead fan for the stove. I had forgotten to do it. So we're in the midst of cooking. We're doing all right. The smoke alarm goes off. This is too loud for the best of us. These guys are screaming, "It's too loud! It's too loud!" And I kept thinking, there are girl guides playing basketball in the auditorium on the other side of the door, and the fire alarms or the smoke alarms going off, and all you can hear are these people screaming, "It's too loud!" So, bully for them for sticking it out. I opened the door, turned the fan on, everything worked out. Within, I think, 5 minutes, the alarm went off, but it just made me chuckle, despite it all, that I had individuals screaming, and on the other side, there are girl guides playing basketball. So noise is a huge issue. I mean, fire alarms would be a huge issue to begin with, but they are also an issue. So as an example, every now and then, Autism Ontario runs a movie matinee. And it's held at Rainbow Cinemas, and it's a very popular event. So families bring their kids. Rainbow Cinema adjusts the lighting so it's not too bright. And when the movie is playing, the lights are still on, but they're dimmed a little bit, not as much as they normally would be. The volume that's from the movie is not as loud. So these individuals can sit and they enjoy the movie, and it is incredibly popular with them. So that is one example. Another example that I wanted to share with you was a young man who hates socks. And really, it doesn't, when you think about an adult not wearing socks, it's not really a big issue. But this mother had a lot of issues with him growing up not wearing socks. So from the time that the snow would start melting, he'd be wearing flip-flops all the way until the snow started falling again. Then he'd wear running shoes and no socks. So he'd get to school, the school would call the mom, tell her that he's not wearing socks again. And this was a horrible thing, and CAS would eventually get involved because she wasn't able to change it, and why should she? He just didn't like socks. So eventually they came to some sort of a relationship with CAS. So CAS would get the phone call from the school. CAS would call her, say, "Okay, we've had another complaint," and that would be the end of it. So there are real ramifications for some of these things that this population has a preference for. The most important thing to remember for an individual who's on the spectrum is that each individual is unique. So the individual who didn't want to wear socks wears flip-flops, and the flip-flops have thongs, or they're thongs, so they have the piece between the toe. Not everybody can wear that. It's a huge issue for some people. Now, I want to share with you some of the individuals that I have had the distinct privilege to meet. There's a young man that I met at a conference. He's actually about my age, so he's still young. He had finished high school, which is actually a big feat for this population, not because they lack the intellect to complete high school or school. It's the fact that they require supports. And that's an entirely different subject that would take another session. So he finished high school. He had also gotten his degree in engineering at Western and then received his diploma in something similar at Fanshawe. He manages counseling very well. This is unusual. Counseling is actually somewhat of a tricky terrain for some individuals, so the fact that he managed it is very good. Now, we do have another individual that I'm going to tell you about who is actually in the program, the Life Skills program. He is high functioning. Now, each of these individuals, by the way, is high functioning. He is high functioning. You can see him riding his bicycle all over town. He obeys the traffic laws. He's a lovely individual. He requires support. When you're sitting in a classroom, beyond 2 minutes, he has lost interest and he's leaving the room. He is barely verbal. His sentences are 3 words maximum. But this is an individual who's perceived to be, or who is rather, high functioning. Another individual who assisted me with the program, she has a college diploma and she's currently working on a degree. She just started university this fall. That's another example. And another attendee is incredibly withdrawn, but within that first week, I think it was the second day, she was ecstatic and saying, "I love it here. I'm not usually this happy, and this is scary. I don't know why I'm so excited. This is wonderful." And she really enjoyed herself, but she was very standoffish with people. But she loved the program. Her attention to detail, she was a writer, and her attention to detail was incredible. She had every character in her stories down to the finite detail. And if she was talking about one person and you said, "Oh, you know what, I remember you were talking about this other person, isn't that that person?" She could tell you immediately, no, that person is different. They have a different personality, they're whatever. So these they run the gamut. And also, if you speak with Kevin Stoddard from Redpath Center, he will tell you quite happily that there are individuals who are in their 50s who are currently being assessed. These are individuals who are very comfortably situated within their community. Some of them are lawyers, some of them are doctors, some of them are professors. He is correct that there are individuals who are much older who are functioning. It's usually their wives or their spouses who are encouraging them to get that diagnosis. That is just within high functioning. The discovery and diagnosis of autism, it's not a medical diagnosis. Nobody goes in for blood work. It's not an x-ray. This is done by observation. It is done by communicating with the families or the individual themselves. It's the behavior of the individual that they're observing, and as well as the developmental trajectory that individual has had since birth. The lower of the functioning the individual, the earlier the diagnosis can take place. Usually it's before the age of 10. The higher functioning the individual is, the later it can be because they are just sliding through. There are a variety of reasons for that. One, there's a possibility of misdiagnosis. Two, if they're females, they can be missed because we do, and historically we have, conditioned our girls to behave in a certain way. So obedience is apparently very, very, very good, and affection and quiet is apparently what is most important. So it's something that has been missed historically. Additionally, because the symptoms are milder, the individuals usually aren't diagnosed until something big happens. So this could be a mental health issue, they're suddenly having an anxiety attack, or they're suddenly very depressed, they're not leaving the house, whatever. That is in some cases where the individual is diagnosed. Now, depending upon your future plans, the diagnosis can happen through a psychiatrist, a psychologist, or a psychometrist. The decision to use a psychiatrist may have ramifications at a later date, particularly if you wish to access community resources. The DSM-5 is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. So when it came out in 2013, there was an awful lot of panic by a variety of different people. And in particular, this population began to panic, because what the DSM-5 had brought forward was, if you didn't fit into the sets of criteria, you were now going to be moved aside to what was called social or pragmatic communication disorder. It is a brand new diagnosis. There are no supports in place. So individuals who are higher functioning, so individuals like, they're called ASPIs, individuals Asperger's disorder, or high functioning individuals within the autism disorder, or individuals who were covered under PDD-NOS. Suddenly you're hearing families really frightened because they're going to lose their diagnosis. And it sounds really weird when you're thinking about disabilities or illnesses. When somebody says, oh my gosh, we're going to lose the disability, you're thinking, this is great, this is newsworthy. It's not true, because the instant you move away from autism into this new disorder is the instant you lose what little support you have. And that is a very real concern. And next on my list is myths. So there are a variety of different myths, and actually I stopped and I Googled what some popular myths might be. One of them is that individuals on the spectrum have no emotions. Well, this is not true. They're often overwhelmed by their emotions. They're also overwhelmed by other people's emotions. They don't know how to handle emotions themselves or how they're feeling. It's difficult to contextualize, and so therefore it's difficult to explain. People with ASD no longer require support once they get out of high school. This is not true. This is families whose children are leaving high school, who are presumably graduating, we will say. There are two things. They're really excited because they never have to deal with the schoolwork ever again, and it's worth partying for. This is a great thing. However, on the other hand, there is nothing beyond it. So I heard it recently that families equate this to falling off a cliff, because the services and supports that are available after high school are pretty difficult to find, especially now with what's called Developmental Services Ontario, which I will discuss very, very briefly. Now, there are complications as well for this group, and one of the examples I wanted to use was a course that I had recently taken was talking about appropriate communication styles. Eye contact is a major thing, looking at facial expressions, body language. Well, an individual who's on the autism spectrum is going to miss social cues, is not necessarily going to have the appropriate facial expression. A deadpan expression is not really an indication of disinterest in the conversation. Eye contact may not happen. In fact, it's unlikely it will, or at least consistent eye contact. They might be looking over there when you're talking to them. They're still listening to you, or well, maybe they're still listening to you, and they're looking off into the distance somewhere else. So some of these routinely suggested communication styles leave out a population that is already having difficulties. So perpetuating that is a real problem. Now, I had a conversation not so long ago with a friend of mine who said she really hates it when people say that individuals on the spectrum don't lie. They do lie, they will lie, but they are honest. They're honest. They look at things very differently. So they will tell you something that might, if somebody else said it, would be insulting. It's not so much. As an example, I had overindulged. It might have been Christmas or Thanksgiving or something. I overindulged and I said, oh, I feel so bloated and fat. And so my son, who is a high-functioning young adult in the autism spectrum, he stopped, he looked at me, paused, and really he was considering this for a moment, which the length of time he had to do that was kind of a problem. But anyway, and he said, then he said, no, Mom, you're not fat, you're cylindrical. Really? Okay. Okay. Another one is they see things very differently. And a friend of mine was talking about how her son was wearing socks and she noticed his toes sticking out. And she said, oh, go change. That sock has a hole in it. And his response was, oh, don't be such a prude. It's just a toe. Would never have thought about that. It would never have crossed my mind that, you know, the toe is, oh, it's a horrible thing. Let's not see that. But he did. It's awesome. Now, mental health actually is an issue for this group. In fact, when it comes to certain mental health issues, they are higher than individuals who are not on the spectrum. So it is particularly challenging to diagnose an individual with mental health issues for a variety of reasons, one of which is, of course, communication. Communication is very difficult for these individuals, especially when it comes down to, well, how are you feeling? Or admitting that there's a problem, because they don't necessarily understand that there is a problem. The most common mental health issue is anxiety and depression. And in this population, it is 20 to 30% higher than for individuals who are not on the spectrum, which is a surprising statistic, especially when you consider that there are some individuals who are making comments about how individuals on the spectrum don't suffer from mental health issues. Adaptive functioning actually does play a significant role when it comes to anxiety. For each of us, as we were growing up, we accepted new responsibilities, and the responsibilities grew as we did. Things changed, environments changed, we learned more about more structured social expectations, we learned about uncertainties, and we coped, we adapted. These individuals who are on the autism spectrum are unable to, or at least those who are experiencing anxiety are unable to adapt to that. So that the adapting to those different scenarios, those require support from other individuals. When it comes to depression, I understand that depression is actually brought about because an individual has a perception of how they are, not based upon how you see them, but rather how they see themselves. So, and they see themselves as being less than. And while it's not a mental health issue, it certainly has implications when it comes down to mental health issues. The vast majority of the individuals on the spectrum after high school become very isolated. They don't leave the house. In fact, studies have shown that individuals after high school rarely leave the house. They become more like hermits. Interestingly enough, though, if they have pets, that the pets actually encourage them to leave the house. I'm not really sure how that works, if they have a cat, how that gets them to leave the house, but it works. In a recent study, it was shown that just under 40% of the sample population that was used for that study, 40% left the house once or less per month. So just something to grab you. Isolation exacerbates mental health if you're not leaving the house, if you're not talking to other people. Any issues or concerns that you might have festers, and this is what happens. Now, access to services is a huge issue. So once somebody hits 18, in order to access, say, Community Living London, you need to go through the DSO to determine eligibility. Now, there are three criteria in determining eligibility. One is cognitive ability, which is where individuals who are on the autism spectrum fall off. They don't get any support unless they've been grandfathered in. So it's 70% or lower are deemed eligible. The second is adaptive functioning, which doesn't seem to play a big role. And the third one is physical ability, which for an individual on the spectrum isn't as big of an issue. There are individuals, by the way, who have physical needs, so wheelchairs, bedridden, that kind of thing. They do fall on the spectrum. Now, some stats. As of 2008, there was an estimated 70,000 individuals on the spectrum in Ontario. Of the 70,000, 50,000 of them were adults. Now, between 2009 and 2012, it was 1 in 150 worldwide. Today, it's 1 in 68. And out of that 1 in 68 is 1 in 45 that are boys. The cost on average per family to look after an individual on the spectrum is about $60,000 a year. Now, how to help? For both an individual and a family member, This is actually coming directly from Dale Monroe. He is a social worker here in town. He works at Redpath, brilliant individual. His suggestion is, and I'm going to read directly from this paper. So, empathic listening, warmth and caring, frequent summaries, which means, for instance, you're going to tell me, oh, I had this day, I couldn't get the game to play, and the dog is making a noise and just won't leave me alone. And you would summarize and say, oh, you know, sounds like the dog won't leave you alone and it's impacting your ability to play your video game. Then they would move on and say something else. Direct questioning. Actually, I would encourage you, if you're speaking to somebody who is calling, although unlikely, who's calling, who's on the spectrum, ask them. They will tell you. Clarify information. So somebody who says, I'm really feeling not so good today. I don't feel like leaving the house. I just don't feel like leaving the house. Clarify. Why do you feel that? Is it cold outside? If this individual is a school-aged individual, is your lunch made? Do you have the house keys? Are you dressed? Did you do what you needed to do before you left the house normally? Maybe they have to make their bed. So clarify the information you need from them and allow them to rant and complain, because you're going to get a lot of information from them. Be their sounding board without judgment. I mean, this is across the board for anybody. But lastly, and this is the one where you're going to actually have to put a time on, talk about their special interests. You'll be on the phone for at least 15 minutes. Because they will talk about their interests. And for the gentleman who loves medieval weaponry, he will be on the phone with you for at least 15 minutes. But give them time to do it. These are individuals who are isolated to begin with. While it's more likely that a family member or friend would call the distress center, it isn't entirely unlikely or impossible that an individual on the spectrum would call you. Now, for friends and family, so a wife, a husband, a parent, a sibling, they're experiencing a vast array of things. So for anybody who has experience with autism and has been around when somebody has been diagnosed, that is a really scary experience, both for the families, the kids. In some regards, it's a place where people can grieve or should grieve. But also it's a relief, because suddenly your child who you didn't know had autism, who is behaving really weirdly and getting into a lot of trouble with a lot of different people. It could be a school teacher, it could be the principal, it could be a neighbor, it could be anything. But you have now this explanation of why that individual did that, or was doing this, or was behaving this way. You know why now. And there is nothing more valuable to you than that. However, you're also going to have the time to grieve. I attend moms groups through Autism Ontario all the time, and it is not uncommon to see new moms, and they're called new moms. They're not new moms, but they're new to the diagnosis. And the experience is the same. They've just received it. It could be the day of, it could be a month later. It takes a really long time to get through it. For me, it took me about 6 months. Now, what didn't help was the fact that every time we went to an appointment, there was always something else. It was never just your child has autism. It was, well, your child has autism and is unlikely to ever blah. So there was always something. So you may be somebody that they call just because they need somebody to talk to. The other instance is the first mental health episode. There are some stories that I have heard that are terrifying. A young man, 17 years old, very large young man, tall and stocky, had a mental health breakdown, and the genesis of that was the school. He just couldn't take it anymore. He couldn't manage the expectations of the school. He couldn't do, there were a vast array of things that he just couldn't do, and he couldn't take it anymore. So he had a meltdown. The police were called. He was restrained, physically restrained. The family, the parents were standing there watching as this was happening. And the police kept saying over and over, what drugs is he on? And they kept saying, he's not on any drugs. He has autism. He's not on any drugs. He has autism. And to enjoy the rest of the experience, they went off to the hospital. And the mom is quick to tell you the doctors were a nightmare. They were horrible. They blamed the parents. They didn't understand what was going on. She said, but it was the nurses. It was the nurses that made them feel better. So this experience is traumatic to begin with. But then to have this go on and on and on, and then try to go through the treatment process, if the individual on the spectrum isn't willing or doesn't seem to understand that there is a problem, counseling or therapy is not going to work. And so that family is going to have to sit and cope with whatever is coming. In summary, this population is comprised with complex and diverse needs and strengths. And I actually didn't touch upon the fact that there are strengths with this group. This population has many challenges. They also have considerable strengths. For instance, they are highly sought after in certain industries for their ability to focus. As an example, there is a company in, I think it's San Francisco, who does the pixelations for a variety of television shows and movies. And it is this population they want to get into the room, because these are the people who don't mind sitting looking for hours at codes for something that might be off. So there's another company that was created by a father for gaming. And his son is one of the individuals he had created this opportunity for. So this attention to detail is actually something that is one of their strengths. The other strength, of course, is their sense of humor. Another strength is the fact that they look at things very differently. This population is tied together by the communication disorders and the social challenges, as well as repetitive or ritualistic behaviors. And finally, there are too few supports in place for this population. If they call you, this is fabulous. And I do hope that this presentation has provided you with more information. Well, thank you very much for allowing me to come and speak to you about this subject that is so dear to me. I do hope that this helps you. If somebody does call, either from the spectrum or the family or friends, that you have a better understanding of how you might be able to support them. Thank you very much.